All right. Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Jimmy.
Get it out! My name's Jimmy and I'm an alcoholic. I hate microphones. I didn't prepare anything or... You know, it's funny because you get a year and you kind of got a prepared speech. And then as time goes on, pretty soon, saying all the stuff that you want everyone to hear, it kind of goes away. And more important to me today is telling you guys what I think you might need to hear, based on my experience. So, I can tell you this. On this date today, in 2004, I was dropped off at Pine Recovery. And actually, let's go back, because on the 14th of June, I was dropped off at Pine Recovery. It was the last resort. My family and friends pretty much didn't want to have anything to do with me, because I had pushed them away as far as I thought I could. By the grace of God, I don't know why or how, but I never got arrested, never got thrown in jail for anything other than just minor stuff. But I look back, and I think about where I'm at today, and I can tell you this. I've got a good job. I've got a job that I probably wouldn't be alive today if I didn't have it, because the insurance that I have is that good. I like my job, and I can tell you right now that I was sitting in them chairs 13 years ago. That's right. And if you would have told me that I would be where I'm at today and have the things in my life that I have today, I'd have told you you're crazy. There's no way. Because that's impossible. Right? Yeah, that's what I thought. Right? Wrong. It's not impossible. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you the first thing that I wrestled with was admitting that I was an alcoholic. And I'm not talking about telling the right people what they want to hear. I'm talking about looking in the mirror every day and saying it out loud to myself that I am powerless over alcohol and or anything else that alters my mind. And I think that is the most important step, because if you are not willing to admit you got a problem, as soon as you get away from all the other people that have a problem, you don't have a problem anymore, right? And then the obsession takes over. And then pretty soon your mind starts telling you, don't worry about it. This time's going to be different. You're going to do it differently. But it's a progressive disease. And every time it gets worse. Every time we go back, it's worse. It's not better. And I can tell you one thing. I'm an addict, okay, as well as I'm an alcoholic. And my obsession, my addiction evolves around my alcoholism and my alcoholic mind. We seek that instant gratification, that quick fix, that thing that's going to make us feel good right now. Never mind later, never mind feelings, never mind going through pain or grief or whatever. We want to feel good. We want to feel good now. And we got that in the beginning. It worked. The problem is that the disease tells us that every time we turn to alcohol, we're going to feel that same way. And that's the big lie. Every time that we go out and put a drink in our mouth, it's going to be the same as it was the first time. The world's going to open up, be better, everything, all your problems are going to go away. And that's the lie. Because after a while, it doesn't get any better. So what do you do when it doesn't get any better? Well, you drink more, right? And you just keep getting, until pretty soon you're just so numb, but it doesn't get any better. It never gets any better. But now you're trapped. Because you can't you can't function without it, you know? And I'm not talking about physically functioning. I'm talking about mentally and socially functioning. I was the kind of guy that back in the day, that I couldn't go anywhere unless I had a beer in my hand, you know? Because that was just the accepted behavior. That's the way we grew up. That's the way we were, man, you know? And whether you wanted to drink or not, it didn't matter. You were going to drink. So when I got here, admitting that I had a problem, it was really hard for me at first, you know? And by the way, I didn't get here 13 years ago. I got here in 87. 1987 was when I was first introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, because everyone else in my life at that time had a problem with my alcoholism except me. So I came here to go fix them. Right? Well, there was a counselor there, and he told me that, because I wasn't doing the program, because I wasn't doing the program for myself, you know. So I was just doing the bare essentials, and I wasn't even doing that. And long story short is there was someone there that told me that I was either going to be dead or in jail if I continued on the way I was. And I looked at him like he was nuts. I said, "You're full of, you know what, because I'm not drinking right now. You're the one that's got the problem, you know. Go mind your own business." And you know what? It took a few years, but he was right. It did get exactly like he said it would get. And so anyway, I figured out that the only way that I could deal with this through suggestions was to admit that I have a problem. Admit it to my inner self that I have a problem. To this day, I have a problem. I still have a problem. You know, but I have a cure that I use every day for that problem, and it works. So once I got past step one, which it took me a while, how many people in here are doing the steps and it takes them like 6 or 8 months or a year or whatever? Yeah. You know how they used to do it in the 40s? You did them all right away, man. I mean, you sat down and you just did them. You know, you're okay, write them out. This is it. Okay, you know, there wasn't none of this. I'm working on it, but I just can't find no extra time, you know, and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And the problem I see with that, and the reason why I think they had you do it right away in the 40s is because if you don't, the program that's supposed to save your life gets put on the back burner. And pretty soon it's for when you have extra time. You know? How many people in here have extra time to do what they don't want to do? Seriously, I mean, really, I know I don't. You know? How many people want to make time to do what they don't want to do? I don't. So, anyway, what I'm getting at is it took me a while to get through the steps. And it took me 5 sponsors to actually find one that finally got through to me to help me get through the steps. And not for anyone else, but for myself. And when I got to 2 and 3, I already had a relationship with God. And I was willing to turn my will and my life over to Him as I understood Him. And as I look back now, you know what? If you don't have a relationship with God, it doesn't matter at that point. At step 2 and step 3, it does not matter. What matters is that you have a higher power, okay? And that's something that you look to give you strength to get through whatever it is you're going through, okay? And that's the thing that you need to give your will and your life over to. And when you do that, that means you're giving up your control. You're letting go. You're saying, you know what? I don't care if the air conditioning quits in this building and the sprinklers turn on. I'm going to do this meeting because that's just the way it was supposed to be, right? And as I was going through the steps with step 3, I was made to understand that my job was to suit up and show up and willingly do whatever was suggested. Not grudgingly. There's a difference, you know. You know, going to that F and AA meeting became, I get to go to the AA meeting, you know. I get to do a lot of things instead of have to. And I'll tell you what, this, the steps, this program is a way of life It applies to every area of my life today. And believe it or not, most of these steps have very little to do with drinking. Drinking is just the end result of our character defects that we let get out of control. That's what I've learned. I've used this program for... I just do it. I practice at work, okay, my job. I suit up and I show up and I willingly do whatever they ask me to do. So you know what? They ask me to do more stuff at work because I don't give them any crap. I just do it, you know? Well, pretty soon, after a couple years, I'm the only guy at my work that can do everybody else's job. So, you know, just because I don't give any crap, I just do it. But it started here. It started in these rooms. It started suiting up and showing up, no matter how hot it was outside, no matter how cold it was outside, no matter how I felt or didn't feel or whatever, I suited up and I showed up. Same thing went with meeting with my sponsor. And as you got through three, when I started getting to my character defects, yeah, it took me a while, you know. To this day, I don't see how anybody can sit down and write out all their character defects in one sitting. I really don't, you know. I don't know how they do that, you know. I couldn't do it. Because after I got a four-step done, you know, I start talking to some people or talking to my sponsor, and there's some more stuff that needs to go on that stupid list, you know. And this could go on and on and on. I finally had to just, okay, enough, man. Let's just do these for now. But, I found out that my character defects were connected to each other. They were all connected to each other. And all a lot of my character defects had to do with me being selfish. Me being impatient, me being me expecting results from things that I had standards for. But they were my standards. It wasn't living life on life's terms. I had my conditions, you know. Okay, I'll do this if you do that, you know, tit for tat. Life don't work that way, you know. And then we went back when I started realizing this. A lot of that had to do with step three, which was suiting up and showing up and willing to do whatever was suggested. If I was that person's not selfish. That person is willing to do whatever it takes to make everybody else happy. And I found as I started doing that, that when everybody else was happy, I was happy. Because most of the time when I pissed everybody off, I was pissed off. You know? So then as I got through, you know, the rest of them, I started, and by the way, it took me a year to go through them all. I'm not suggesting that to anybody. I'm just suggesting that a knucklehead like me, it took a year. But it all reverts back to that first step, you know. I was, every day when I started, man, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to go to these meetings anymore. Why do I have to go to these meetings? Why do I have to do this program? Man, I haven't had a drink in months, right? Well, because if I go back in the mirror and do my first step again, guess what? Oh, I still have a problem. I'm still an alcoholic. I am powerless over alcohol. But as I was getting through those steps, it was being clear to me that my alcoholism, again, like I mentioned earlier, had very little to do with alcohol. Because alcoholism, it's not so much for me, anyway, the way I interpret it, it's not about the drink. It's not so much the drink. It's the behavior that makes us drink. It's our perception of the world that makes us drink. That's what fuels our obsession. That's what gives us the reasons to do the way we do things. That's what gives us the reasons to be the kind of people that if you're not cool with me, I am not cool with you. Instead of just being, you know what, the world is the way it is, and I got my own little space, and I don't care what anybody else does. As long as they don't threaten my health or my safety, that's just the way it is. So as I went down the list, and I got up there to 8 and 9, I had to make some amends. Some were financial. some were a face-to-face, you know, meeting with some people. Some were great. Some of them sucked, you know. Some of the people I had to make amends to, I wanted to punch them in the face, but guess what? That's not what it's all about, man. It's not about, again, because again, the disease steps in again. The disease creeps in there and says, hey, you know what? If they don't accept your apology, you ought to just punch him right in the mouth and let them know who's boss. Right? That's how it is. But that's not how it is. That's not the way this program works. The way we're supposed to make amends is we're supposed to make amends because we're getting rid of it. We're getting rid of this thing that's been renting space in our head. So if we make an honest attempt to make amends with somebody, an honest attempt now, it doesn't matter how that turned out. It doesn't matter how they perceive it or whatever. Because you made your honest attempt to make things right. That's all that matters. And you know what? Sometimes it's a little painful at first because I'm conditioned to that crap. You know, somebody, you know, I apologize to somebody and they don't react right. You know, I'm going to punch them in the face. But no, that's not the way that works. Today, I'll tell you what, and as moving up the steps again, I'll tell you what, I practiced step 10 every day, man. I had to promptly admit I was an a-hole, because I can be one. And if it wasn't for step 10, I'd be in a lot of trouble. Step 10 almost got me fired. My boss had done something that I thought was wrong, and rather than telling him going the right way about it, I called him an MF, this, that, and the other. Next thing I know, we're behind closed doors talking about whether or not I need to keep my job. And so what did I do? You know, what do? You know, this guy just MF'd you at work, and he's your boss, and now you're behind closed doors, and now he's got the cards, you know. What do? You know, I know, you know, and there's that little voice that, punch that sucker right in the face, man. Kick his feet out from under him, you know. Yeah, go out with a blaze of glory, right? No. Why? Why not? Why can't we do that anymore? Because that's right. Because people depend on me. Yes. Because people depend on that paycheck. You know, it's not about me. And it's not about how I handle this person in that demeanor. So you know what I did? I apologized to him immediately. I immediately said, you know what? What I said was wrong, and I am terribly sorry. I didn't mean to say that, you know. I can't take it back. And guess what? The outcome was good. I can sit here all night and name instance after instance after instance where step 10 saved my butt, you know. As far as step 11 goes, that was a bummer too, boy, let me tell you first. I tell you what, I had enough AA in me that I was like a halogen light bulb, man. I was on fire, man. I was brimming with recovery, you know. Come over here and stand over here and you'll get some, you know. And I was sponsoring people at Pine, and I was so mad because none of them stayed sober, you know. My first sponsee went out and killed himself the first night. And most of them didn't stay sober. And I went to my sponsor and I'm like, what is this BS, man? I can't, you know, I thought you said I was doing good, man. I can't even keep nobody sober. And he told me, you don't keep people sober. You keep yourself sober by helping others. And I'll tell you what, that was hard to grab for a minute, you know. But now, you know what? It makes sense. Because we don't help each other. Okay, here's the way I understand it works now. You initially don't help someone else to help them. You help someone else to help yourself. And the package deal is that it helps them automatically. That's the way I understand it. And you know what else happened? I quit loaning people money. Why? You know what I did instead? I gave them money. Yeah, you know why? Because when people like us loan people money, we're setting ourselves up for failure, right? Uh-huh. Yeah, you just got clean and edible. Here's $40. Pay me back Friday. You know, and you're just like, is it Friday yet? Because I'm going to stomp somebody's butt, you know? No. No. Instead of loaning somebody $40, you give them 20. You know? And you do it in the name of, well, I do it in the name of the Lord. And I'm getting to that part. But I find out that, guess what? The people I don't even know how many people I've given money to, because I don't count, because it's not about me, you know. And I learned. In fact, let's go. I'll go up to step 12. Okay, here we are. Step 11. Okay, and I told my sponsor in the beginning that I believe in God, but I'm mad at him, so I ain't going to church. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, we'll see, you know. And incidentally, my sponsor at that time was Kenny Holcomb. And we're going through the steps, and it took about a year, you know. And, well, you ready to go to church? I said, I told you I ain't going to church. There's no way I am going to church. So one night we sat down in his place, you know, and we're talking about recovering, talking about the steps, and he says, well, he says, I got to tell you something. He says, you're coming up on step 11. And I said, yes. Who's your higher power? And I said, God. What do you know about him? Well, I know he's my higher power. I mean, I know he's, you know, do you know anything about Jesus Christ? Do you know anything about anything that has to do with God other than the fact that he's God and people go to church to worship him? No. And then he said, well, how are you going to do step 11 if you're not willing to go to church? Where are you going to go to improve your conscious contact with God? Gaining knowledge of his will. How are you going to do that? It made sense. And then he reminded me that in the beginning, you admitted you had a problem. You also said that you're willing to do whatever it is you need to do to stay sober. Well, here's this bump in the road, step 11. How are we going to get over it? I guess I'm going to church. Guess what? Church wasn't that bad. When you go to church and you don't have that F-U look on your face, they're nice to you. They really are. As a matter of fact, and that's another thing, by the way, as I went through the steps, the F-U face went away. You know, I could walk into a bar and get in a fight whether I picked it or not. But when you walk into a place like that, and I'm not saying I went to bars, but I'm just using that as an example. When you go to a place like that and you don't have that look on your face, people treat you different. Your body language says a whole paragraph about who you are before you even open your mouth. I've learned that in a program. So I went to church. And you want to hear the funny thing that church, what I really got out of church that just blew my mind is a lot of the stuff that the preacher was saying was right out of the book that I had already been reading. I couldn't believe it. How did I miss this? I've gone to church in the past. How did I miss this? How did I not know when I was reading the AA book and going through the steps that this is out of the Bible, you know? How did I not know that, you know? Well, I'll tell you what, it fed my mind, it fed my soul. I started going to church on a regular basis, you know? As time went on, I went to quite a few churches. And I'll tell you something else. My understanding about churches, actually my understanding about churches, meetings, anything in general, this is how I relate to them. They're like bars. You had your favorite, right? Had your favorite people there. And then if that wasn't available, then there was the next one in line where, the crowd's okay, you know, but I'll get fed. And then there's just the crap hole place that, you know what, but I got to get some, so I'm going to go there. You know? Same thing. And I'll tell you how that relates to me is somebody had told me at one time that I need to use the same standards that I used for chasing booze and drugs. And that was, I didn't care. You know, you think it's hot in here right now? Because I'll tell you what, man, I've sweated my butt off in places worse than this to get drunk and get whatever else, you know. The same standard, that same pursuit, that same willing to go any length to get loaded. You should be willing to go any length to stay sober. Period. So then, step 12, like I was touching on earlier, step 12 was, it was a bummer at first, you know, but I didn't give up. And that's another thing I learned in this program. Never give up. Never give up. And some of my sponsees, maybe a handful, stayed sober. Most of them didn't. But I've come to realize that I did. And that's the most important thing. And I know I realized that, well, the reason I stayed sober was because I tried to get that person to do this, but they didn't do this, but I do it. That's why I'm still sober. So for 13 years, I've been doing this program. And I'll tell you something, too. Since I've improved my relationship with the Lord, I have a job where I see one of the first AA members I ever got to know, and that's Danny Galindo, every day. Every day. At work. It's not a meeting. And we're friends. We're really good friends. We became really good friends in recovery, and then all of a sudden now we work in the same place, you know? But the point is that I'm safe. The Lord put these people in place at these places so that I'm always reminded of where I was and where I am, you know? When you start believing in the Lord and you start asking Him to do for you what you can't do for yourself, you start realizing little things that they're not so coincidental anymore. They mean something. They're a reason. You know, I can tell you, you know, I don't want to blow somebody's anonymity, but I can tell you what, when I walked in the door tonight, man, there was a reason why I was chosen to come here tonight. And there's a reason why that person was chosen to come here tonight. And that was just one in a long line of coincidences between me and that person, you know. He doesn't do things by accident, I can tell you that. Since I've been sober, I've had my gallbladder out. Got some really good drugs when I did that, right? Nope. My wife, the only thing I got, and I don't even remember what it was I got it at the hospital. When I got home, my wife dumped every pill I had that they gave her out and put extra strength Tylenol back in. So I was getting fed extra strength Tylenol, and I'm saying, man, this really hurts, you know. I'll just suck it up, you know. But you know what? I got through it, you know. It's a mind thing. But I've had, I had a stroke in 2015. And it's in God's hands. What are you going to do? You know, you can't do much when you can't move your left side, you know. I recovered, though. Why? Because back to that dang program, dude. I willingly did whatever they told me to do. No matter how stupid the exercise or the therapy was, I did everything to the letter. And I just worked 12 hours today, you know, and in the heat. You know, and I mean, I didn't, there's a few things I can't do anymore, but the point is that I believe my recovery hinged on that part of my life, which is I willingly do whatever I'm supposed to do. Same thing with my hip. Man, I had hip surgery in 2016. I had a full-on hip replacement, left side. And I was back to work in 2 months. I was back to work busting tires, truck tires, in 2 months. Because I willingly did. Yeah, it was a little painful. Wasn't bad, though. Wasn't unbearable, you know. I just willingly did whatever I had to do to get by, you know. And the program reaches every aspect of my life. Every aspect. And I'll tell you what, I am truly grateful. And I'm as humble as I can be at that moment. I can say that. At any moment, I'm as humble as I can be. And the reason why I say that is because I'm not perfect. There is nobody perfect. You know, in my world, the only perfect one, Jesus Christ. That's it. But you know what else I learned in this program? We don't have to be perfect. Does anybody here know anybody that's done a perfect set of steps? Is there such a thing? Because I don't think there is. I think if you're honest, if you're brutally honest, if you're totally honest, if you're as honest as you can be, honest as your innermost self, with everything that you do in those steps, you won't fail. Does anybody in here know anybody that went through the steps and said, screw it? They did the steps to the best of their ability. They honestly did everything. They got sober. They got a good job and everything. Decided they weren't happy and went back out. Now, don't get me wrong. I know people went back out. But it wasn't because of the steps. It's most of the people I know, it's because they quit doing them. They quit doing the program. And that's why we need to stay humble. And that's why we need to always go back to step one. I'm an alcoholic. My life has become unmanageable. I am powerless over alcohol. Anyhow, I don't have much of anything else, you know, other than I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to see all of you, you know. And I'll tell you what, man, somebody sitting in a chair out there might be standing up here in 13 years. Who knows? You know? But I know I ain't going anywhere. I'll tell you something I thought of today. This is something I thought of today, okay? Is there anybody sitting here that could not drink for a whole year? Or, okay, they could not drink or use for a whole year, unsupervised, for $1 million? Think so? You really think so, huh? Well, let me tell you something. If you do that, the place you'll be in a year is worth way more than $1 million. I guarantee you that. I guarantee it. With that, I'll shut up. But thank you.